This programme has been funded by the Broadcasting Authority of Ireland with a television licence fee. Hello everyone, it's Dr. Alison Lennon here and welcome to our very first programme of the documentary series Heritage and Heroes. Each episode visits a different school in counties Louth and Down, where we talk to students about their local archaeology and history, and they tell us about monuments around their town and what makes their area special. The first programme comes from St. Malachy School in Dundalk, a school I know well because I attended it in the far distant past. Throughout the programme we will have intervals where I will be interviewed by Liam Gormley, a former student of mine who, like myself, attended Trinity College in Dublin where he got his Master's. Welcome Liam, will you say hello to our listeners?
Hello.
Is there any questions you'd like to ask me, Liam?
Could you tell our listeners what sparked your interest in archaeology?
I'm a native of Dundalk and I've always had an interest in the town's history and archaeology. I suppose my actual fascination began because of my parents. My dad was a member of the Laird Archaeological and Historical Society and he had a keen interest in the history and archaeology of Laird. As children, myself and my siblings visited, although we would have said were dragged, to a lot of local monuments with my parents. This would have included souterrains, manor houses, castles, abbeys, monasteries, you name it. And we became very familiar with monuments like Munster Boyce, Mellifont, Roach Castle, Cuchulainn's Castle, even Newgrange. The interesting thing was we would also visit souterrains in people's back gardens and we would climb over fields and fences to find earthworks. So we learned at a very young age that there was a lot of history and monuments in the town of Dundalk, in the county of Louth and in the counties around it. And the great thing about County Louth is that its monuments represent human activity from the very earliest times. Like just out the road, we have the Pailleach Dolmen, and that's a stunning megalithic tomb located at Ballymac or Ballymascannon, just out the road, as I said. It is one of the finest examples of a dolmen in Ireland, and it dates from between about 4,000 to 3,000 BC. Now, it stands at around 3.5 metres high. And it has a huge capstone, about 3.5 metres in length, and it weighs at least 35 tons. And it's balanced on three upright stones. Visitors will notice lots of tiny pebbles on top of the capstone, and just this is due to a local legend, which says if you throw a stone up and it lands and stays, you'll be married within a year. I love this combination of archaeology and legend, which is an essential part of the history of Louth. We have numerous sites in Louth that provide us with this combination. For instance, Fahart, just outside Dundalk. My mother was actually born in Fahart and she grew up there and we would have spent a lot of our childhood there with our grandparents. So I was familiar with this area from an early age. The wonderful Fahart Hill and St. Bridget's Shrine comprise megalithic, ancient, medieval and even modern monuments. It is an area which draws pilgrims, praying for the intercession of St. Bridget. And while Christianity is certainly here at Fahart, it is a thin veneer over deeply pagan practices. Over the centuries, the stories of two women called Bridget have become intertwined in an intricate Celtic knot of myth and miracle. The Celtic goddess Bridget and the Catholic Saint Bridget both personify spiritual practices of their time in Ireland. At St. Bridget's Shrine, and you know it attracts thousands of pilgrims every year, visitors come across a number of balan, or holy stones, that reputedly heal various bodily woes. Kids love going out there, you know, there's a holy stone for the knee, where you go and you place your knees in it, there's one for the head, for your back and so on. There's even a hoof stone, which farmers encourage their sick cows to put their fun into. Up the road from the shrine, we find the Hill of Fahart. Now, this is a large drumlin sitting at the southern entrance exit to the Gap of the North, which is the main route between East Ulster and the rest of the country. And the whole top of this hill was a hill fort in the Iron Age times. And subsequently, Fort Hill was converted into a Martin Bailey castle when the Anglo-Normans arrived. And because it stood at the southern end of Moira Pass, Fahart held huge strategic importance for many centuries. It was actually the scene of a number of battles. Of course, we have the famous Battle of Fahart, but there was also a legendary battle fought by Cuchulainn, and we know of this because of the tarn. Actually, foul played an essential role in the town, specifically in the famous tale of the Brown Bull of Cooley. There was nowhere else where so many battles were fought during the famous raid for the bull than Fahart, even though it was outside Cooley. As a historian and archaeologist, what I love about Fahart is that it is an ancient site which is filled with not only epic historical events, but with diverse archaeological monuments. There's even a touch of spiritualism, mystery, and of course, pilgrimage. So after that very long-winded answer to your question, it was my parents who first sparked my interest in archaeology. My father, because of his fascination with this subject and his interest in the monuments of Louth. And of course my mum, because of her love of Fahart and St Bridget and the local landscape of the area.
Do you think Louth has much to offer with regards to archaeology?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And the Heritage and Heroes series looks at archaeology from all epochs. People have inhabited the area around Dundalk since around 3500 BC. One of the reasons we know this is the presence of the monument at the Pulig Dolmen, which I mentioned earlier. The town of Dundalk itself was founded by a guy named Bertrand de Verdon in 1185. He was actually an Anglo-Norman lord. And his family actually played a fundamental role in the town's development and archaeological legacy. But if we look at the first monument construction in Dundalk, we can see how one site can cover many historical eras. The town began a castle town where Bertram erected a large moat castle. This is a castle which would have had a mound and a wooden tower built on top of it. It was a defensive structure. This enormous circular moat that he built is situated on a ridge to the west of Dundalk town, and it's known locally as Cuchulainn's Castle. This actually suggests that the moat may have been built on an earlier and more ancient earthwork. The steep-sided mound rises to about 10 metres. It was probably built in the late 12th century. There are signs of a small D-shaped bailey or courtyard, sort of an additional space, at the northwest. And earlier records show there was another large bailey to the east. So there was two other sort of areas where there would have been some form of settlement. There was a souterrain, or an underground passage, set into the mound about halfway up the track leading to the building at the top. And this may have been part of the earlier earthworks. I think it's a wonderful thing that we here in Dundalk have this physical evidence of the town's origins and developments. But what is even more interesting about this site is that it's not limited to this castle town moat, this Anglo-Norman structure. A number of names have been given to it over the centuries, although Cuchulainn's Castle remains the most popular. Other names range from the ancient Dún Dalcha, the official sounding castle town mount, or to the romantic Pirate Byrne's Castle. This is because a local man, he was named Pirate Paddy Byrne. He ran a successful, salt manufacturing business near the port, and he was suspected of being into a bit of smuggling, which is actually something that is quite common in this area even today. So that's why he got the nickname the Pirate Paddy Byrne, and he built a stone tower house on top of the moat. Well, it's not really a tower house, it's a bit shaped like that, but he built this building on top of the moat in 1780, and it was really to show off how rich he was, and it became known as Byrne's Folly, and that's actually the building there today. So we've this one site in Dundalk that can provide archaeologists and historians with a wealth of information about the development of the area. Now, if we change track and instead of one site, we look at one particular type of monument, the souterrain. Louth has one, in fact, I think Louth is the highest concentration of these underground passages in Ireland, especially in the area between the Féin and the Castletown rivers. People in this area must have lived under the constant threat of attack. Souterrains had secret entrances and served as places of refuge, particularly during the Viking Norse raids in the 9th and 10th centuries, though we do know that some were constructed as late as the 13th century. One of these monuments in Louth at Dunamore is actually a national monument. Because they lack the often romantic or eerie mythology and folklore of, say, the Ring Fort, And also lack, I suppose, the dignity of burial sites. Pseudo-inns are thought of or perceived as merely underground structures consisting of a passage or passages leading to one or more chambers. But actually, archaeologists have really sort of looked at pseudo-inns, and research and, I suppose, speculation has seen them emerge as an intriguing combination of a defensive structure, and it's also a subtle housekeeping device. It could also be used as a secure larder or cellar. Although proven to have survived long beyond the ring fort, they continue to be associated with the rats scattered above ground across the countryside. The practice of building pseudo-inns may well have been introduced to Ireland by monks returning from Europe. But these early Christian man-made subterranean places, which are actually marked as caves on the Ordnance Survey map, and they're known by the Irish word uve, managed to adroitly straddle early Irish history and possess a historical continuity of their own. They have been around a long time and, as I said, spanned many centuries. And you know what's interesting as well, of course, they feature in the great Neolithic passages, passage graves of Naois, Douse and Loch Crew. We have actually over 3,500 pseudo-inns in Ireland, and they are actually concentrated in about four main areas: Loud, Antrim, Central Connacht and North West Munster. We have pseudo-inns in Loud all over the place, at Tetitra, Dunamore, Towny Hall, Ballybarrock, all different, and yet they have similar elements. For such a wee county, we have an abundance of pseudo-inns, and this is a reflection of our county, particularly in North Loud around Dundalk, which have been subject to numerous attacks over the centuries. Hello everyone!
Hi!
Today we are recording in the Friary School in Dundalk, which was my school and which my daughter is now at, Ava, who's a bit embarrassed looking there. And we're in fourth class and we're going to talk about archaeology. Is that okay?
Yes.
Okay. Archaeologist is someone who tries to figure out what life was like a long time ago by looking at the things people left behind. So what is an archaeologist? So we look at things like artifacts, and these could include old coins and tools and buildings and rubbish, and we study these artifacts and ecofacts as well, which we're going to look at in a minute, and we try and understand how people lived. So what does an archaeologist look for when they're digging? Can you see these pictures here of various artifacts?
Yeah.
Would someone come up and describe what the top one looks like, what they think it is? Okay, Rosa, if you want to come on up. What do you think that top picture looks like?
Like ancient necklaces from the Egyptians or something.
They look like they're from the Egyptians, don't they? But they're actually Irish. They're from the Bronze Age. Could someone come up and describe for our listeners what they actually, each one of them looks like? Yes. Because there's three different necklaces, or well, they're type of necklaces, and they look like gold. What does the first one look like, the Lunula?
It looks like something that they used to on their dresses.
Yes, it's like a collar. It's nice, isn't it? Yeah. And the next one's a bracelet. What do you think? How would you describe that? It's sort of twisty, isn't it?
Yeah.
And it's called a torque. And some of them actually go up your arm like a snake. They're quite famous. And then the last one is a gorget. And it's another. Would you say that was a necklace?
No.
What do you think it is?
Say it's another collar.
It's another collar. Very good. Thank you. That's great. You can have your seat again. Could someone come up and tell me what they think the next picture is, if anyone knows anything about the next picture? Okay, Tara, come on up and tell us what you think the next picture is. And again, it's another set of artifacts. What do you think?
Stones.
They look like stones, but can you sort of see there's a shape to some of them?
Rocks.
Rocks, yes, okay. Well, they are made out of rock and they are stone, but they're actually tools. They're tools. They would have been used as tools. They could have been used as, spears or axe heads, all different types of, from the Stone Age, artifacts, okay? And what we do is when we dig them up, we clean them up,
and we have a look at them, and we can see that they've actually been grinded on the side of them, and that would tell us they've been fashioned into a type of tool. Okay? Thank you, Tara.
Rocks.
Rocks. Okay, what's the bottom one? Yes. What does the bottom one look like? There's a whole pile of them.
They look like Viking coins.
Coins, very good. And they're all different colours, aren't they?
Yeah.
Yes, and again, they were found in Ireland, okay? And we have Viking coins. That's fine, thank you. You know, the strange thing about Ireland is we didn't have any sort of coinage in Ireland, really, until the Vikings came. And even after the Vikings came, we didn't use much coins. It was really the Normans who introduced coins. What do you think we used to buy things with in the prehistoric age? What do you think was the most valuable thing in Ireland? Okay, Julia, move on to Alice.
They trade stuff.
They would trade stuff.
So if they wanted stuff, they would have to go. They would have to get stuff and trade it with them.
Yes, trade it with something. Okay, good girl. Thank you, Julia. Can anyone think of anything? What do you think we trade with? Okay. What do you think? Now think about this. There was no coin, so what did we trade with?
Bracelets and necklaces.
Bracelets and necklaces, jewellery. Good girl. We would have traded with that. Anything else? Yes. We're trying to figure out here for our listeners exactly what people used before we had coins.
Stuff that they made out of, like, tools.
Tools and stuff like that. Very good. Okay. Anyone else? Ava, come on up. And now, as I said, the listeners were still trying to figure out what we might have used.
Iron.
Iron, very good. Yes, we used iron. Good girl, thank you. Okay, over here in the corner, yes, the girl, yep. So we'll come up with iron and jewellery and tools.
Cattle.
You are a star. What's your name?
Lauren.
Lauren, very well done. Good girl, Lauren. The main thing we traded with was cows. Cows were invaluable, and that is what we used. A cow was worth a fortune, okay? Now, there was other things. We found lots of little copper and brass rings, little rings, and we found so many of them, we think they might have been some form of currency, okay, that we used them as coins. But mainly, we don't see coins in Ireland until the Vikings, and the Vikings only used coins with each other, really. It was when the Normans came in the 12th century that we start seeing coins. So these are all examples of artefacts, okay? Imagine walking in a freshly ploughed cornfield, and out of the corner of the eye you see a triangular-shaped object sticking out of the dirt, and you pick it up, and you shake off the dust, and it's an old spear point, thousands of years old. And it was used to hunt animals or battle. Okay, it was used in battle. And you have it now. It's in your hand. That's why I became an archaeologist. I love the thought of holding something that was made thousands of years ago. And it can be anything made or used or changed by humans. And it can be portable. What do I mean by portable? Does anyone know? Down the back, yes, if you come up. So we're just saying, audience, what are we talking about when we say portable? And we've someone here that's going to tell us.
It's able to be moved.
Good girl. Yes, you can carry it around. So an artifact is portable. Okay, very well done. And again, the reason we're interested is we can ask and answer questions about the past. And here we have, which our friend here talked to us about, Lenoula. This is the Cogglebeg Hoard. So in March 1945, we have this Roscommon farmer, Mr. Hubert Lannan, and he was out cutting tuff on the bog for the fire that night. He's out cutting the tuff, and he hit something with a shovel. What's that, he thought? And he bends down and he starts moving the tuff off, whatever was he found, and he slowly uncovered a hoard, which means a whole lot of gold and treasure. And one of the pieces was this beautiful gold lanula or collar, and there was also two gold discs with it, and they had been in the bog for 4,000 years. And Hubert carefully gathered all these precious items together and brought them home for safekeeping. And then he took them along, and they're now in the National Museum in Dublin. And you can go in and see them for free in the National Archaeological Museum. And you can see how exquisitely made this was. Imagine some wealthy woman wore this about 4,000 years ago, and it has still survived in perfect condition, buried in a bog for 4,000 years. And then we have, again, you can go and see this for free in the National Archaeological Museum in Dublin. This is the Ardagh Chalice. It's from the 8th century. It was found in County Limerick. And again, there's a farmer about 150 years ago in 1868, and he's digging up spuds for the tea. The wife said, go out there and get us a few spuds. And he comes back after he started his digging with this, one of the greatest treasures of the early Irish church, and a brooch and a cross that he found when he was out digging up the spuds. A lot of the things we find in Ireland are found by people like farmers who just come across them. So think about that. If you ever find anything interesting, if you're out for a walk or if you're out for the day with your parents, pick it up, see what it is. It could be worth a fortune. So then we have something called nature facts and eco facts. Okay, and an eco or nature fact is anything that's grown, it hasn't been changed or altered as such, but it has relevance to some sort of an old settlement, okay? People use them. And there could be seeds or animal bone or insects or fish bones. And they do tell us about the environment of the people who left them behind. For example, seeds and plant parts or small animal remains found in an archaeological site can be analysed, okay? They can be analysed in a laboratory, and we can figure out what type, what season of the year, what this man did. We can tell that, what his occupation was. And we can also find out about the climate and the environment of a period of time by analysing ecofacts. So there's an image here that we got in a dig in Waterford many, many years ago. Would anyone like to try and guess and describe for our audience what type of bones we have here? Does anyone think they're human bones?
No.
Do you think they could be? Yes, come on up here and tell us. So they're definitely not human bones, okay? So there's only two other types of bone that could be. What do you think of? They're not human.
Fish bones.
Fish bones. Well done, yes. We've got a shellfish remains, we've got some bird remains there, and animal remains, and we also have plant remains. And you can see all the different colours. And again, they survived perfectly well for a very, very, very long time. And then finally, we have mentae facts. Mentae facts. And these are the ideas and the values of the people who lived a long time ago. Now, these are harder to figure out, because we have to figure out the way they were thinking and what was important to them. So we use these mentae facts with artefacts and monuments, which we'll talk about, to form a picture of the cultural traits of the people who lived long ago. So it's trying to figure out stuff. We look at the artefacts, we look at the ecofacts, we look at the monuments, and together we try and figure out the culture of these people long ago. And cultural traits could include art or language or diet. So we put all these sources together. Okay, could someone come up and read what artefacts are? Let me see. Amy, come on up. So what are artefacts, Amy? Can you read that out? These are archaeological sources.
Artefacts, monuments, refuse, traces.
Artefacts, monuments, refuse, and traces. Good girl. They're one sort of source. Can someone ring what a mentae facts are for me? Yes. Yes. So we know that archaeological sources include artefacts, monuments, rubbish, and traces. Traces they leave behind. And now we're going to look and see how we get to mentae facts.
Exciting information.
Theoretical.
Assumptions.
They're big words. I know I should have checked them. And even the next one's a big word. Can you say it after me? Ethnographic.
Parallels.
And then the last word. You know that last word?
Experiment.
Good girl. Thank you. So they are mentae facts. Thank you very much. Yes. And then who's going to read out nature facts for me? Okay, Lola. So nature facts or eco facts, what are they?
fauna, flora, and other components.
Yeah.
Components of the natural environment, people.
Yes. Yeah, so thank you. Taking all these together, we can figure out how people lived a long time ago. Okay. So a feature. So you get a monument. Can anyone take a guess what a monument might be? An archaeological monument. Come on up, Rose, and tell me. A monument, okay?
Like a castle or like...
Yes, like a castle. It's a building.
Like a village or something?
Yeah, it's something that was built, okay, or made, and that you can't move it from one place to another. Well done, okay? Now, a feature is something that's part of the monument, maybe windows or doors. It can also be something that archaeologists don't really know what it is. And in this case, this is a site, I think this is an Egyptian site. And what you see here are post holes, which they would have had some sort of timber posts. And we also have these sort of squares. You see the pattern there? Now, we weren't 100% sure what this is exactly, but these are some sort of features, okay? So remember, a feature can be a part... Like, look in this room. What would be a feature in this room? Could anyone guess? Come on, just everyone shout out. You can shout this one out. Decoration, yeah, but it has to be something that would last a long time, Kayla. Yes? Come on up here. Come on up and tell us. So look around the room. Remember what I told you. What type of thing would be a feature in this room?
Walls.
Walls. Yes. Okay. No, this... Yes. Walls.
Windows.
Windows. Yes, the windows. Okay, so you know what features is. Yes. Okay, one more. It's great to see you all joining in.
The doors.
Good girl. Okay. So... And here we have, does anyone know where this place is? Has anyone ever been to this place? I know Ava Lawless has been to this place many times. Yes, I don't know if she loves it as much as I do. Roach Castle, hands up, shout out to anyone who's been to Roach Castle. Stacey, yes, have you been there?
Yes.
Yes, okay. And here, you can see the features here, the windows, the doors, the little, see those long windows, those long narrow windows. They were very long and narrow on the outside, but they were very wide in the inside, okay? This is a medieval castle. And the reason they were very narrow on the outside is that anyone coming along shooting arrows at the window wouldn't be able to get them in. But the people inside had a big, wide sort of ledge to lean on, so they could fire out no bother at all. It was a defensive feature in Roach Castle, just outside in Dublin. We'll talk about Roach later. Okay, so I am going to give you a task to do. Okay, let me just see. You think I'd be better organised. And I want you, Molly, can you give these out? And yes, can you give them out too? There's not many of them. Let me just see. See how many of them... I should have some more. And what you're doing is you're looking for to find the feature or the monument. Okay, so let me just... Oh, I have more here. Good girl. Now, I don't want you to write in these because I use these. There are... Let me see. There's two more. Can you give that one more? Goodness me, I'm not as well organized as I should be. There's another one. You can share them between desks, maybe. Let me just see. Oh, here, I've got more. And what you're looking for here, guys, is there are monuments, there are features, and there are... I want you to find the similar features, okay? There are three toilets, guys. There are three toilets. There are three types of suites. There are three types of ovens. There are three types of light. And there are three types of bath. I want you to find them, okay? Can you do that? Give that out there, Molly. So you're looking for three different types of suite from the past. Three different... Can you just pass them along? Good girls. Three different types of suites. Three different types of monuments. Three different types of features. Three different toilets. And three different baths. Okay? Now, no, I want you to share them in groups. If people don't have them, pass them back. Here's some more, guys. Here's some more. Yeah. So just go into grapes, guys. Yeah, we got some more here. And Molly, has everyone got some? Give them down to Cara and Rosa and over here as well. Okay, let me just see. And here we go. Here we go. There's one. Oh, there's two. Yes. Yes, I want to talk to you about it. So, guys, don't frighten them. You find me. There are three toilets, three lighting, three baths, three types of suites, and three types of oven. Okay? And I'm going to call up one spokesman. Put your hands up when you've identified them. Okay, good girls. It's too happy together, isn't it? Yeah, okay. Gaia. Okay, hands up when you've identified them. Okay. And they're all from different periods in history. Yeah, if you want to. And they're all archaeological, most of them are archaeological finds. Okay. All right, okay. Ava and Kayla, you get your hands up first. The two of you come up and show me three different toilets. Okay, so three different toilets. And describe them to me, girls. Stand here in front of the microphone. So, can you describe the first one? Is there an ordinary toilet there?
Yeah.
So, there's a toilet that looks like your toilet at home?
Yeah.
Okay, show me the next one you think is a toilet. Okay, that is a pole. Now, I'm going to tell you about this. A pole looks like a lovely bowl with flowers on it. Can you see it, girls? Yeah. Well, my granny and granda had a pole. And what happened was it went under your bed. And when you had to go to the toilet during the night, you sat on the pole. Now, I have 65 first cousins. And my granny and granda lived out the country. And a few of us would stay out there every weekend. It is one thing in the middle of the night to get up and use the pole yourself. It is horrible when one of your cousins gets up and uses the pole during the night. So you should be very grateful we've lovely, nice toilets inside now. And what's the other one, girls? Very good. Can you describe that? What does that look like? It's like some sort of a hole in a stone seat. Yeah, yeah. Thank you, girls. Okay, you can sit down. Very well done. This, guys, is a garden robe. It's a medieval toilet. You'd be going up the stairs in a medieval castle, and you'd look, they were spiral, and they were made out of stone, and you'd look in as you went up the stairs, and you'd see a wee sort of cupboard with a stone seat with a hole in the middle of the seat. And that's where you'd go to the toilet. And whatever you did, would go trickling down to the outside walls, and then trickle down the ground. So stone castles would have been a bit smelly. But hundreds of years ago here in Ireland, there was no sugar. Okay, we didn't have sugar in Ireland for a long, long time. And during the Crusades, people would go over to the Middle East and they'd come back with things like dates. And to buy a bag of dates that you could get for €2 now would have cost £100, okay? And they were so sweet, people absolutely loved them. So dates were a real delicacy. And then the other one, this is a plate of bay leaf with honey and nuts in it. And this would have been a medieval delicacy in Europe, okay? Again, there was no, you wouldn't have had a big thing of cake, but you would have fruit and things like honey, which was really sweet. Okay, who is going to come up and show me where the baths are? So is there a modern bath, girls? Come on over and tell me, there's a modern bath that you have in your house, is
yeah.
there? Yeah, yeah. Nice, lovely bath, bubble bath, great.
Yeah.
What other baths can you see?
That one right there.
Yes, that is the oldest bath ever discovered, okay? And it's made out of clay, all right? I think it was Syria was uncovered. It's about 4,000 years old. So it's nice to know that people can have a nice relaxing bath 4,000 years ago. And what's the other one, do you think?
This one here, maybe.
And could you describe that for our listeners? Is it, what's happening there?
Well, there's a thing over it there. I'm not sure. Is it...
You can tell me what you see. It's okay, whatever you think.
Well, there's two ladies there.
Yes, they're servants.
Yeah, servants, and they, like, get everything ready and stuff.
Yeah.
And it looks like that the bottom of it is, like, made of wood or straw or something.
Yeah. And is there anyone in the bath?
Yeah.
Who's in it? Is it a man?
I don't know.
I think it is a man.
Yeah.
And what does he seem to be doing? Is he eating his dinner?
Oh, yeah, that's what's over.
Yeah, that's what's over. Yeah. Thank you, girls. Very well done, okay? Now, these are Roman baths. When the Romans arrived in England, they built these baths where lots of people would go.
Like hot tubs.
Ah, yeah, and you go to the bath, you and your friends, men, and you'd sit in the bath and you'd have your dinner in the bath, which is like that.
No.
No, I don't think so. Okay, so lighting. Who is going to... Okay, Aoife, come on up with whoever's with you. Lighting. And the first thing I want you to show me is the modern light. Is there a modern light there?
Yeah.
Let me see it. So it's a lamp like you'd have at home in your sitting room. Now show me the next. What do you think the next light is?
Candles.
Candles, yes. Candles have been used for thousands of years in the form of light. And what else?
And torches, yes.
Torches, yes. Let me see them. These are lit torches on a wall. This would have been the main form of lighting in a medieval castle. Castles would have been very dark, dingy places, and you would have these sort of bright torches along the wall to try and lift some of the gloom. Very well done, girls. Thank you. And the final one we're looking at is how they cooked. So the two girls at the back there, yes, come on up. Lauren from earlier, yes, so yes, the cattle. Okay, ladies. So is there a modern sort of oven there? Can you show me the modern oven?
Yeah, down here.
Yes, listeners, it's like any oven you see in any house nowadays. What do you think is the next one?
This one?
That is the next one, and that is the Bayeux tapestry. And it was a tapestry that was created about 20 years after the Norman invasion of England. So it would have been about 1088, very old tapestry. And a lot of what we know about the sort of Normans comes from this tapestry. And on it you can see them roasting an animal on a spit. Does anyone know what a spit is? If you want to tell us what the spit is? For our listeners.
It was a stick that they pushed an animal on and rolled it around to make it was all cooked.
Very good. That's it perfectly. Well done. Okay, girls. So we've the spit on the Bayeux tapestry. And then we have... Can you show me the other one? Yes. And that is an Iron Age full of fear, okay? And what they done was they lined a pit with stone. And then they would get a stone off the fire that was boiling hot. And they'd throw it in to this pit, which would be filled with water. And it would heat the water up and they could cook things in it. So very well done, okay? So well done, girls. You are showing your knowledge. So the next thing we have are monuments around Dundalk. Does any of the brain boxes in this class recognise any of these monuments? Yeah, okay. Can you come up? No, beside you. Yes, come on up. Do you recognise any of these monuments?
The Prolique Dolmen.
The Prolique Dolmen. Well done, yes. Okay, we're going to talk about that in a while. Does anyone recognise anything else? Has nobody been to Cuchulainn's Castle? Yes. And Ava, can you come up and tell us what the real name should be? And we'll talk about it a wee bit more.
Pirate Paddy Burns.
The Pirate Paddy Burns, and we'll talk about that later on. And does anyone down in the bottom, what does that look like, that picture down in the bottom? Kayla, yes? Come on up and tell us what it looks like.
A tunnel.
A tunnel. Very well done. That is a souterrain. Can we all say that word? Souterrain. Say it again louder. Souterrain. And that is French for underground. And we'll talk about that in a wee while. Just a little bit about archaeologists. We always dig in square holes. Yeah, and we can organise the site piece by piece. We have to put a number on each of these squares. And that helps us to be really, really organised. And we can keep really good records. And if we do find anything, we put them in a bag like this. It's a plastic bag with sort of clear white strips in it. And this is called a finds bag. And we put information. We would number the artefact. We would write the date it was found, the site, and a brief description. So you always find archaeologists with loads of these finds bags. Again, artefacts, as I told you, we take them back to the lab and we look at them and we try to figure out what life was like a long time ago. So, archaeology tools. Could anyone look at the board and tell me, come up and describe one of them tools for me? Yes, Sweetie, come on up. So pick any one of them tools and describe it.
And the second one is a bucket.
A bucket. And do you know what we use that for, Sweetie? We would put in, we would use the bucket and we put all of the soil that we've dug up, we put it into this bucket, and then we pour it out from the soil onto something to give it a shake. Is there anything up there? In fact, I have one here. Could you tell the listeners what this is? Do you know the name of this? Your mum might use it when she's baking. She might use a different one. I know, it's a word you can sometimes forget, can't you? It's a sieve. Could you describe it for our audience? What shape is it?
A circle.
It's a circle. And there's loads of little bit of wire, isn't there? Mm-hmm. And what we do is we pour in stuff that we put into the bucket and we give it a good shake. And the duck comes off, and then we can see what artefacts we're left with. So could you pass that around and let Evelyn have a wee look at that? Any other artefacts here? Yes, Abby, come on up and tell us. Not artefacts, sorry. Tool.
The brush.
The brush. Why would we need a brush, do you think?
Maybe to, like, when you find stuff, you wipe the dirt off.
Very good, Abby. Yeah, we brush the dirt off. Now, here we have some brushes here. And these brushes would be for small finds. So they could be for little small bones, because they have to be delicate. If they're little delicate artefacts, you can't go in with a big brush and go, you can bust them. So we have to be delicate. So these are small fine brushes. They could be for teeth, or they could be for jewellery, or they could be for little bits of seeds or tiny animal bones, bird bones or fish bones. So as for our listeners to tell you, there's 10 here, and they're all numbered different sizes, and they go from one that's really, really, really small with a very small brush on top to not that much bigger, to be honest with you. They look a bit like paintbrushes, but they're called small fine brushes. So we can pass them around, the girls can have a look at them. Okay, does anyone else want to come up? Yes, okay. Now, the girls are back, don't worry, keep your hands up. I'll be calling you.
The first one looks like a shovel.
That does look like a shovel, and that is the most important tool that I would use. Can anyone guess what that's called? Abby, come on up. Can you think what that's called?
No, but I know what it's used for.
What's it used for?
Is it used for, like, cement?
Actually, that is something they're used for. They are used by workmen to mix cement. We use them for something a wee bit different. So does anyone know what it's called? Guy, come on up here.
Do you use it for to dig things up?
We do use it to dig things up. And because it's not a big... Like, we do use shovels sometimes. When we go on a site, we might use a shovel to remove the topsoil. But we don't use big shovel near where we think the artefact is. Why do you think we wouldn't use a big shovel?
Because you might damage it.
Good girl, Molly. So we use these, and these are known as trowels. Now, I normally have trowels with you to show you, but of course, as I'm getting older and more dodgy, I left my trowels in the last school I was in. So we'll just have to have a look at this one. But as someone pointed out, Abby, workmen use them nowadays to mix, to put on cement, but they are used by archaeologists as trowels. The middle picture up there is a radar, which actually would take can tell us what's under the soil, and we can figure out how far down the artefacts are. We also use one of these on site. Could someone come up and tell me what it is and why? The girl next to you, Eva. Yes, come on.
It's a measuring tape.
It's a measuring tape, and you can pass that around in a minute. And what do you think we use it for?
To kind of see how low down the different artefacts are.
Very good. Yes, we measure where the artefacts are, but we also measure the artefact. We have to put especially if we don't know what it is, we have to put as much description of it on a finds bag as we can. So we'd always have a measuring tape with us. So stratigraphy, there's only one thing you guys need to know about this. This is like a cutout of what an archaeologist thinks. So we start off up the top, this is an imaginary site, and we come across with modern topsoil, and then we come down and you've got 18th century cobblestone, and then you dig down a bit more and you'd have the collapse of a medieval wall, dig down a bit more, medieval pit, dig down a bit more, you might have a Roman road down further, Iron Age soil. The only thing you need to be interested here is this, and I want you to repeat after me the archaeology golden rule about stratigraphy. The further you dig, the older the artefact. Can you say that out loud? The further you dig, the older the artefact. Okay, so just remember that. Here we have a Mesolithic dwelling. Can we say that word, Mesolithic? Have you looked at any of this yet, guys? Have you done any work on the Mesolithic? No, you will do.
when you go to secondary school in a couple of years, one of the first things you're going to learn about is the Mesolithic period. And it's 10,000 years ago. The first proof we have of people in Ireland was from 10,000 years ago. And they arrived in Mount Sandal, which is up in Derry, which is the very north of Ireland. And they lived in these cool wee huts, like upside down ice cream cones. And then we had the Neolithic period, which is about 8,000 years ago. Now the Mesolithic, they were inclined to move around. They didn't stay in one place very long. And they were hunter-gatherers. Can anyone take a guess what that means, hunter-gatherers?
It means like they...
What do you think they were hunting for?
Like animal bones or like...
Animals to eat. Yeah, animals. And gatherers, they went out and they gathered fruit, berries and things like that, okay? And they moved around a lot. Then we come to the Neolithic period, which is a couple of thousand years later. These guys started staying in the one place. They became farmers. They often built near a forest. What could you get in a forest that you'd want? What use would it be to anyone trying to build a new place to be near a forest?
Because there's the trees for wood.
For wood. And what would they use the wood for? What do you use wood for? Building, very good. And what about keeping warm? What would you use wood for?
Fires.
Fire, very good. Another place to settle was near water. Why would they want to live near water? Okay, yes.
So you could go fishing and catch fish?
Yes, exactly. Good woman yourself. And there was no horses in Ireland at this stage. So one of the main ways of getting around was by boat. So that was another reason they'd like to live near water. Also, what do you do with water? You drink water. And then we have Bronze Age dwellings, and this is in County Clare. They lived in something called a roundhouse, and you can see why, can't you? Because the house is round. Now, we could only guess and try and figure out how they lived in the Neolithic and Mesolithic period. What were their houses made out of?
Straw
and wood. So why do you think they're not around anymore, so we can only guess what they were like? Do you think straw and wood would last a long time?
No.
In fact, we were up recently in Navanport, Amon Maca, up in Armagh, and they were telling us that the Iron Age dwellings would last about 8 to 10 years. So there's no chance that there would be any sort of remains for us to examine now. The way we figured it out is when they would have bits of timber, like here on the Neolithic dwellings, can you see the shell of the house, all these bits of wood? When the wood went into the ground, these posts, they stained the soil a different colour. So when archaeologists like me come along, we can look at the different colour of soil where the timber would have been, and it helps us figure out how the house would have looked. By the time we get to the Bronze Age, what is the bottom half of that house built out of? Brick, yeah, stone. And stone hangs around a lot longer. So we've actually out in a place called Plaster, we've cousins living out there, it is actually called Plaster, and it's out near Mount Pleasant, they found the remains of two of these Bronze Age houses. So here we move on to medieval, and we've Martin Bailey castles. The very first building in Dundalk would have been a Martin Bailey castle. We look at that now. And here we have Green Castle in County Down, a fine example of a medieval stone castle. Can you see the Martin Bailey guys? Could someone come up and describe that for our listeners?
It looks kind of like a path.
Yeah, a path leading up to a...
castle
house, right.
Thing.
Okay. And is it a flat or is it on a hill?
It's on a hill.
Very good. Okay. That hill is actually the Mott. Okay, thank you. And the Mott was man-made. It would take 48 to 50 men about 5 days to construct this man-made hill. Now, what would be good about being on top of a hill if you were under attack?
Because it would give you more time to prepare, because it would take them a while to get up the hill.
And also, isn't it better to be firing down in someone than firing up as well? Good woman, yes, okay. So they built this Mott castle, and then they'd build a wooden tower on top of it, surrounded by a wee fence. And then they'd have a field or a bailey, which is really a courtyard beside it. And again, they would have a fence in there. And all the soldiers would live in there, and so would the animals. And when they were under attack, they'd run up the wee wooden bridge up the hill. They go into the tower and they defend the castle. And you find these all over Ireland. We've a lot of these in County Louth. Here is an old map of Dundalk at Castletown.
Dundalk began a castle town. Do you know where Eva mentioned the pirate Paddy Byrne's castle, Kilholland's castle? It's also known as Castletown Mount. And what happened was there was this guy called Bertrand de Verdon, and he was living over, he was originally from Normandy, but then he settled in England after the Normans conquered the English, and at sort of around 1170 AD, the Irish were all fighting among themselves. So there was no one true king of Ireland, there was lots of different kingdoms. And one of the kingdoms invited some of the English, the Anglo-Normans, in to give them a hand beating another Irish king. And so the Anglo-Normans arrived, and one of them was called Bertrand Verdon, and he came along and he conquered Loud. Oriel, it used to be called. Does anyone else know anything called Oriel here?
Oriel Stadium.
Oriel Stadium. Which team plays there?
Dundalk.
Which is the best football team in Ireland? Can you tell me that as well, please? Is it Dundalk?
Yeah.
Thank you very much. Okay. Oriel Park would have been named after Oriel, which was Loud. And Bertram comes along, and the King Henry says, well, you're great, you've bet all the Irish, I'm going to give you a bit of land in this area. And that's how Dundalk and started. And this would have been the first building in Dundalk, okay? So you see, this is Kilholland's castle. You have this motte and this wooden tower on top of it. And do you know, actually, girls, that right up to the 17th century, Dundalk had a town wall around it and 8 castles within the walls. And it started here, at the top of Arm Street. So this would all have been surrounded by a big wall, and there was a castle along every few metres you come to a castle. So suzerains. Loud is the smallest county in Ireland, but it's also the proudest and the coolest county in Ireland, am I right?
Yeah.
And we have more of these than any other county in Ireland. Why do you think people need suzerains?
To hide.
To hide what?
From other people.
Other people attacking you. And also, so you hide yourself. What else would you hide down there? Anything you didn't want stolen. And what about, it was also cold down there, so what would you keep down there to keep it from going off?
Fire.
And food. Food, good girl. Okay, Tara. We have them all round and dark. Here's a picture of a medieval castle. Now, you see that first picture? That's a garden robe. So that's a toilet. Okay. Would any of you like to go in that toilet?
No.
Okay, the next one is a bit of exaggeration. Eva would say it's a bit ODM, which is called what she calls me, overdramaticism. That's my name for Eva, okay? It's a bit overdramatic, but that's all the poo coming out of the toilet. You see the big funnel there? Into the moat from around the castle. Then here we have a matriolation. You see this one here in the corner? And that's over the door of a castle. And if people managed to get up as far as there, you'd throw stones down on top of their head. If they managed to bust open the front door and get into the castle, they'd come into a hall like this, and up here you see mortar holes. And people would stand over these holes, and as the attacker came into the hall, they'd pour hot oil down on top of them. And the last one is battlements. What do you think those battlements would be good for? If you had your bow and arrow, what could you do with them battlements? What do you think? And someone was attacking the castle. Would it be good for... Anyone think? Yes. Come on up. Rebecca, isn't it? Yes, Rebecca. What do you think you'd use them for?
Well, the people might hide behind it.
Exactly. Exactly. So you'd pop out, fire off your arrows, and then hide back in behind the battlement. Very good. Has anyone been to Corland's castle? Do you know it's built on a big mound? The mound it's built on top of. That is what Corland's castle is about. There's an ancient mound, and it was some sort of an ancient earthwork, and that's what associated with Kilholland. That's why it's called Kilholland's Castle. And then when Bertrand de Verdon came along, the Anglo-Norman, he built on top of that mound, which often happens in Irish earthworks, so rebuilt. And then, so that would have been Castletown Mount, and there would have been a wooden castle on top of that many hundreds of years ago. But the actual monument that's there now is... from the 18th century, and it was built by a guy called Paddy Byrne, Patrick Byrne, and he was a pirate. And he used to be on the seas around Dundalk, and he built this castle. So that's what's there now. So you will know in future, when someone's saying, oh, I'm going up to Kilholland's castle, you're going to say, no, actually. You're going to the pirate Patrick Byrne's castle, okay? Who knows Roach?
Good girl. Good to see that hand up, Ava. Let me see, hands up high. What do you think of Roach? Isn't it fantastic? Do you know it was the only castle in Ireland built by a what?
Woman.
And what did she do? She didn't want anyone else to steal her design.
She threw the architect out the window.
Out the window when she built the castle. She threw him out the window. Thank you, Eva. This is one of the most finest castles in Ireland. If this was in somewhere like Scotland or Northern Ireland or England, half of the country would go and see it. But in Ireland, it's very hard to get it. You have to get up a big slippery slope. Then you have a field of mad cows. And you know why they're mad? Because when you chase them, they don't run away. They chase you. They're quite scary. But if you manage to get past the mad cows in the slippery slope, you'll come across this beautiful double-towered gatehouse. It was built around 1236. And as I said, the only castle in Ireland built by a woman. It was based on the plans of Beeston Castle in Cheshire, which the Rhaetian Verdon family weren't far from. And it guided the passage called the Moira Pass. This is a part of where you got from sort of here, Leinster, into Ulster. And it was a very dangerous route. There was always attacks from the Nail of Irish. So they built this castle to protect the route. I'm going to leave a lot of sweets here with your teachers because you've been absolutely fantastic. Can you give yourself a big clap? Thank you all very much. Well done. You were brilliant.
So, that was our first episode of Heritage and Heroes, and we'd really, really like to thank the Friary School in Dundalk, especially Breed Galligan, the principal. And the girls were absolutely wonderful, as were the teachers. And I have to say, it was wonderful back in this old school of mine.
You said you want the children in Louth, Armagh and Down to become aware of the history and archaeology in their surrounding areas. These programmes are one way of encouraging children to go out and visit these monuments. Can you suggest any other ways?
Sometimes you find people in certain areas are truly aware of their monuments, very proud of their monuments, even get involved in conservation or cleaning up of their monuments. And then other places you visit or other areas, people don't know what's down the road from them. I suppose, you know, I became interested, as I said in the very first programme, I became interested in local archaeology and history through my parents, and I think parental involvement is a must. Now, I'm a mum myself, and I know they can be very expensive to entertain your kid. Everything costs money. The cinema, Pirates Den, God help us, Taylor Park. And while the children enjoy these day out, they can be costly, stressful, and let's be honest, boring for the parents. But if you look online, you will find dozens of monuments and sites all over this region, most of which are free in. So what I would encourage, and what I do myself, because I'm practicing what I preach, is pack a picnic, head off in the car, and maybe visit Narrowwater Castle, which I mentioned in our programme on Newry. It's free in, and I know that when we take, you know, Ava and our cousins, the kids love exploring the floors of the castle and going up and down the stairs and checking out all the wee details. So then, once you're there for a while, and as I said, there's a ranger there, so we can give you more information about the castle, we head off again and we go to Green Castle, which is past Warren Point, near Kilkeel. And it's actually the site called Cranfield. There's a lovely beach there. And Green Castle is a fabulous castle. It was built in the 13th century by Hugh de Lacy, who we also mentioned before, to defend the southern approaches to Ulster. And this royal castle, because that's what it was, stands on a sort of a rocky height. It's not high up. It's not as high up as King John's Castle across the loch. But it is built up there. It's surrounded by a rock-cut ditch. And it commanded the ferry link, which in the medieval period there was a ferry link between Carlingford. And it would have defended sea and land, the sea and land of the area, so Carlingford Lock and the area around the castle. And due to various attacks on the castle, the building that's there now, is a mix of 13th to 16th century structures. And clearly visible from the opposite shore is Carlingford Castle, King John's Castle, which was also built by Hugh de Lacy. Now, not many sites in Northern Ireland can lay claim to being besieged and captured by Edward the Bruce.
But Greencastle was in 1316. And despite being wrecked on many occasions, the castle actually continued in use. It was continually in use until the early 17th century. We hope you've learned a bit about the archaeology of this region and its history, and how interesting it is and how lucky we are to live here. And maybe one of these days, if you have nothing to do, you'll throw the kids into the car like my father used to with us, and you'll say, we're heading off to visit an ancient monument. Now, they might complain, I know we did, but when they get there, it could be absolutely magical. Thank you for listening. Thank you to my recordist, Paul. Thank you for Liam for taking part in the programme, and thank you so much to all the students who took part, all the teachers, and to you, dear listeners, for tuning in. It's Dr. Alison Lennon here. Goodbye.
This programme has been funded by the Broadcasting Authority of Ireland with a television licence fee.